Peter Thomas Fornatale here, recording a new spot for our founding partner, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. So proud to work with these guys for more than a year now. They do amazing work. We as horse players know it's important to give back to the athletes who are at the center of this sport. There's no sport without the horses. We want to support them when their racing days are done. Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation makes that work happen, and we want to give to them. And the best way to do so is through our custom URL, trfinc.org/players. If you have a big hit because of this show, or even not because of this show, and you're feeling generous, head over there, trfinc.org/players, and make a gift and let them know we sent you. That URL one more time, trfinc.org/players. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again. It's Pegasus weekend. It's actually the day of the Eclipse Awards. We published that Eclipse special yesterday. If you're looking for more Eclipse info, I'm going to recommend that you listen back to that one. Not going to talk too much Eclipse here, if at all, though I have a feeling there'll be some stuff to review on the early show next week. Instead, I'm going to go over some questions, talk about some of the stuff going on in the contest world and the world of thoroughbred racing, and then we'll look ahead to six stakes races, graded stakes, happening at Gulfstream on Saturday. And to go over it all with you and me is a man who has moved from the planet Texas temporarily to South Florida. He's the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's up?
PTF, what's the word? Things you didn't know about JK, I'm ironing. I'm a very good ironer. Back in the day, for whatever, like, we went through this, like, phase when I was in, like, middle school and high school where it was, like, cool to crease your pants.
You're dating, like, yourself, JK.
Dude, look, I mean, we used to get, like, the Stay Flow starch, and I'd use, like, half a bottle on one pair of jeans. And they'd be, like, crispy, you know? I don't know why. I don't know why it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen, but we used to do it. And so I became pretty good with the iron at a young age. And often, my girlfriend will sometimes throw me her clothes to ask me to iron them because I'm the king.
That's how good you are. Traditional gender roles being turned around in that relationship. I like to hear that. JK, what's going on in South Florida? I saw the view out your window. It looked pretty cool. What have you been up to since you got down there? What are you looking forward to over the next few days?
What have I done since I've been here? Nothing much. I did get to Pipes and Black Rob have been elusive. They're around here somewhere, but they're up in Delray Beach. I'd imagine I'll run into those two sooner than later. Doogie's in town. I'm trying to catch up with Doogie of Saratoga Paddock Bar fame. If Pete's the governor, Doogie is the lieutenant governor. And who else? I went to dinner last night with Nick Luck and Peter Rotundo Jr., which was always fun. And tonight's the Eclipse Awards. So I think I'm going to be sitting at Scott Cole's table when he receives his Eclipse Award. And then tomorrow is a kind of a free day. And then here comes Saturday with the Pegasus. I'll be playing in the contest, two entries there, nowhere to sit. I'll just be freestyling, running around, trying to find somewhere fun to hang out.
You didn't put up the $20K for the suite this year, JK.
No, I didn't put it up last year either. That was other people. I just glommed on. So the suite, you know, look, Gulfstream is a lot of things. It does a lot of things right, and there's some things it doesn't do so well, and it's not the greatest place to go racing. Ten Palms is cool, but it's like, it's just like any other kind of restaurant at a racetrack. It doesn't have those kind of special places. You can still watch the races with a whole lot of character and whatever, and the suites are great, and so they actually have the best suites, I think, of any racetrack. I mean, they're awesome the way that they're set up, so it's always fun if you can sneak your way up there, but it's not always easy.
Well, if you're a listener who has a space in your suite, you know who to tweet at if you want to see color for clothing and listen to semi-intelligent opinions about the racing. JK will tip for accommodations, so there you got that. Now, hearing that Doogie's down there, I just learned last week Frank Scatone's going down there. I'm really starting to regret not being there myself. It's one of these things, and I'm sure horse players listening can relate, the give and take when you're a horse player in a relationship, especially when there's a lot of travel involved. So for me, especially because this weekend of Pegasus and also the Arizona conference a couple of days, Susan had business trips at the same time, I just decided punt on these. As much as I want to be at them, it's just, it buys me goodwill to get to Keeneland multiple times, to get to Oaklawn, to get to Saratoga every single weekend, and all the other things I need. It's tough, though, and I'd be curious to see if any horse players out there have any particular stories about how they navigate these things. But I'm definitely experiencing some FOMO right now, JK.
Yeah, the trick is you date someone or you find a partner that's in racing, and then problems are all solved.
It's true. May create some problems of its own, I'm going to guess, but at least you don't have to worry about having to miss out on these exciting events. You mentioned Scott Coles. Let's pause there for a second. I just want to say my annual how cool it is that a horse player gets nominated at the industry awards. This is an idea that goes back to early days of the NTRA, and you can't talk about it without giving props to Stephen Crist, whose vision this really was to have the horse player acknowledged, the NHC champion. He's not there because he's the best horse player in the world. He's there representing all horse players. I'm eager to hear what he has to say. I'm sure he's a guy who pays attention to detail. I'm sure he's been sweating his speech, but that's cool that you'll be there to offer support. That's another thing I feel bad about, not being there just to give props to him. He's been a great representative of racing in this year, and I look forward to continuing to have him on the show. Whether or not he's able to successfully defend his title against approximately 670 competitors in a couple of weeks' time, what does this horse player talking at the Eclipse Awards mean to you, JK?
Oh, it means a lot. I think it's awesome. I love the fact that they get recognized in front of, you know, the biggest players in the game from an ownership and breeding and training and riding standpoint. You know, I think we obviously appreciate the horse player and feel like we deserve more credit than we probably get from the industry as a whole. And so when we do get that credit, it's really nice. You know, I won't be yelling Scott's name out when he's up there. I did that when Paul Matisse won. I did it, and I was in trouble. I got told that was not proper behavior to yell Paul's nickname from behind when he went up to from behind the room when he won. So I'll be golf clapping when Scott goes up there.
That's much more genteel and probably the right way to play it. People want to know, though, JK, are you going to be periscoping from the bar, you and Dave Weaver, while betting harness during the ceremony this year?
I'll try. I can assure you of that. Now, look, the Eclipse Awards used to be like a 3+ hour production. They've tightened it up last year, and this year it's said to be less than an hour and 45 minutes. So, you know, it's not nearly as daunting of a lift. So you don't have to start scratching your neck and slip out the back.
You can go an hour 45 without making a wager, but when it was 3:15, that was quite another story. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, no. I mean, the harness betting might go down on the phone or something. Just, you know, keep the juices flowing, but no, I won't need to leave, I don't think.
All right, that's good. That's good to hear. We're curious to hear your report on it. Give people the details. When does it start? We know it's broadcast live on TVG, but folks wanting to watch, what's the exact start time on this?
Pete, you know me well enough to know.
You don't know the answer. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm dead serious. This is what my brain has done today. I'm guessing the cocktail party starts at 6 and the show starts at 7. So I'll get to the cocktail party. I'll like leave at 5:45-ish, see what happens.
Oh, my goodness. Let me see. I'll look this up because, you know, people want to know this stuff. They might want to tune in at home.
I'm going to be right.
You think you've got it? You think it's a 7 o'clock start? 8 p.m. it looks like. Tune into TVG. Check local listings, of course, because I don't want to be held responsible if you miss some of this. But I'm very intrigued. It was great having the Try hosts on the other day. And there's some interesting awards. Is there anything in particular you're sweating or you want to see happen? Or give me your overview of your attitude heading in just as a racing fan.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm interested to see what happens with Trainer. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be Chad, but I think Steve's got a compelling argument training two horses that are going to be, you know, that potentially were going to be Horse of the Year finalists. I actually don't think Midnight Bisou was a Horse of the Year finalist. I think Maximum Security jumped up late, but definitely one that's going to win her division's Eclipse Awards, and Matoli will win the Sprinter, so, and probably the older male. So it feels like there's an opportunity for those two horses to kind of project, you know, Steve Asmussen and a winning Trainer, but, you know, it probably won't happen. And the same can be said about Matoli. I mean, I think Matoli has an argument against Bricks and Mortar. I don't think he'll win, but he's got an argument. So an interesting category to watch as well. So those are the two that I guess I'm the most interested in, and they might already be decided, but at least I think they're interesting.
It should be fun to see what happens. Three-year-old, another one that you could make a case, but I think it's hard. I feel like at the end of the day, that's going Maximum Security's way. And we talked before about Andy Beyer making the case he should also be Horse of the Year. I think you and I both went in a different direction there. But for you, is there any doubt Maximum Security walks with the three-year-old honor?
No doubt. He's the three-year-old champion. He's a three-year-old champion for sure. His resume it speaks for itself. And you can toss out the wishy-washy cross the wire first in the Derby, and he's still the three-year-old champ, in my opinion. He beat Olders in the Cigar Mile. He won the Haskell and won the Florida Derby. Those three in this year are enough for him to get that recognition.
That's right. Even without the extra credit some may be giving him. Anyway, we'll see how it all goes down tonight. TVG, 8 o'clock. Looking forward to it. I want to talk about the Pegasus really quick. I was trying to get Nate Newby on here today to give the rundown. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to connect, but the fact is, you mentioned you're playing in it. We can still give the rundown. I know some folks had an initial reaction of disappointment that the rules to this are different than in past years, but I still think it's a fantastic deal for the horse player. Yes, there is an entry fee, but it all goes back in the form of the purse. It's $5,000 that you're going to be betting, $1,000 for the entry fee, so a $6,000 buy-in total. And the important thing to note, $100,000 added to the pot. You can play, obviously, from Gulfstream. You can play from Laurel. You can play from Santa Anita. Or, as I imagine a lot of people, and the folks who don't know they're playing yet, who are going to play because of hearing me say this, are going to probably be doing so because you can play online via your ExpressBet account. So it's not too late to sign up and get involved. If you're a serious live bankroll player, if you're a serious horse player, if you're going to be betting this kind of money over the course of this weekend, I would say allocate it to this Pegasus contest because of that added money and the chance to really win something that's a major. You're playing in it, JK. What are your thoughts? Was there any disappointment in your mind about the new format?
No, I mean, look, I commend Stronach for doing it from what I guess 2 or 3 years where they kind of did the whole thing where they put up all the prize money. But I understand that that's a financial undertaking, and it can be tough to be able to justify that when you pull up the old spreadsheet. So I have no problem with it's still a lighter lift from the horse player's perspective when it comes to putting up that $1,000 of your $6,000. You know, I think normal format, you'd feel like that entry fee money would be a little bit higher if you compared it to other racetracks from the ratio of dollars from the entry fee. So, I mean, it doesn't bother me at all. I think it's fine. I like that they went to one day. I thought the 2-day Pegasus contests were Friday's racing was a little bit hungry, I think is probably the best way to say it. And so that's good. That's a positive. If you're playing on track at Gulfstream, which I will be playing, it's not the reason for it, I just happen to be here, is there's a $10,000 bonus for the highest finisher that's playing at Gulfstream, and a $5,000 bonus for the highest finisher, the second highest finisher that's playing at Gulfstream. So rewarding that golden dollar, and so for people that are making wagers on track. So it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Nice full card of stakes races. You know, in the third race, we'll get to see our boy Pay Any Price for the Matisse brothers and Avril Racing. We'll be taking on Sheiky Shabazz and a few others. So that'll be fun earlier in the day. And then the Graded Stakes start. I think we end with five in a row, maybe five or six in a row Graded Stakes. And so that
makes me worry. That makes me worry you haven't prepped properly for the show, because those were the six races I told you to look at, and they are, in fact, all Graded Stakes. But we'll get
to it. It's five or six.
Six.
I looked at them. I'm good. I think the first one's the Hopper, the Grade 3 Hopper.
There right? You go. All right. You're back in my good graces. For me, the biggest difference between the Pegasus in the first 2 years and this year, I do think this is a case, overused corporate term, but appropriate in this case, of right-sizing. I feel like the 12K was a lot to ask people to bet, especially as you pointed out with what those Friday cards were. I mean, just think about it relative to the Breeders' Cup. Does it actually make much sense that these 2 days of racing would require the players in the contest to be spending more money, handling more money than the Breeders' Cup? I don't think so. At 6,000, one-day contest, that feels just right to me. I'm in favor of these changes. I think we'll see some good stuff happening, and I'm excited to hopefully get a chance to talk to the winner, whoever it is, unless it's about three people that I refuse to let on our airwaves, no matter if you set me on fire, if I didn't. If they win, we'll just pretend it didn't happen. But I have a feeling...
The rules have changed, Pete. You got nothing to worry about.
All right. That's a perfect segue, actually. Talking about contest rules, I've had a mess of people talk to me about the controversy with this late NHC qualifying event. I want to talk to you about it, JK, and get your opinions publicly. I talked about it at length with Steve Bick. Keith Chamblin was on there talking about it, but we haven't talked about it on here. And for everybody who wants me to write something about it, I feel bad. I feel genuinely bad. If I wasn't so damn busy, I would try to write something about it. But my current life, and, you know, as the pod continues to expand, and hopefully we're going to have some exciting announcements in the next few weeks, I really can't justify writing stuff that I'm not getting paid for right now, especially something like this that would take several hours to put together and do justice to. So this conversation will have to suffice. So for those who don't know, there was an NHC player, an experienced NHC player this year, who, after receiving the maximum two entries, had a relative, a younger female relative, who started playing in tournaments. And the other day, I guess it was one, and I apologize if I get any facts wrong. See, this is the thing. I talk on the podcast, I'll miss a fact. Can't do that in writing. Another reason why it's so much easier for me to do here. But I think there was a tournament on horseplayers.com and a tournament on Horse Tourneys. They were both NHC contests. Okay, so the older player was playing in the one for tour points, and the younger player was playing in the other one. They both ended up in quote-unquote winning position. Exact same picks on two entries, all placed within, you know, seconds of each other from the same IP address. Very clear violation of the Beard rule. You're not allowed to play a card for somebody else in these NHC qualifying events. So... And the NCRA were in an interesting position. I was sort of skeptical that anything was going to happen. To their immense credit, they made the DQ. Of course, you can also argue, if you were super serious, and I promise I'll let you talk at some point here, JK, you can argue, if you were super serious about deterring this kind of stuff, that the older player's two entries that he had already won could have been taken away. They did not go that step. I know there are players who thought they should go that far. I felt like this was a sensible compromise that establishes how serious they are about preventing this type of stuff in the future. I love the fact that Keith Chamblin also announced that all the plays for this year's NHC are going to be published. I think that'll be a major deterrent. JK, I don't know if you were involved in this decision, privy to these conversations as a member of the Players Committee, but I'm just curious to get your take on what went down here and how it was handled.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like many things that happen with the Players Committee, you know, Keith will essentially send an email with the pertinent facts, and then we'll just, it's like this never ending email chain where people kind of give their two cents. And this situation, no one asked us to be confidential, so I'll share what I feel is appropriate. Keith had kind of said, look, this is what we're leaning. Does anyone have any objections? I could be wrong because I don't read all. It's a lot of them. I don't remember seeing anyone object to the decision to disqualify based on the information that we were given. also based on some, like, there's like a kind of a previous situation that kind of, if you fit, looks like a duck, smells like a duck, and walks like a duck. And then one time, you know, a year ago, it kind of was another duck too, that it's probably a duck now. Like it's, it was one of those deals.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I like it.
And so, look, it's tough because I actually, you know, the player, I actually like the player from a personal standpoint.
Oh, I like him a lot. One of the reasons of I'm not saying the name.
Yeah, one of the emails that I sent back, I said, if it was three other people, I'd be voting to tar and feather them in front of the Bellagio. but here's the thing, is that when this whole collusion thing kind of came to the forefront with what happened to Breeders' Cup at Del Mar and the Breeders' Cup betting challenge, we were obviously, you know, involved in trying to get some things fixed with that. You know, we talked about it on the show. I was part of the letter. I was on the wagering committee that helped change the rules at the Breeders' Cup. And so when the collusion conversation came up at the NHC, I have to be honest that there it was met with a lot more resistance than you would assume because of the main argument that people made is, how do you define it? And it's very gray and it's hard to see it. It's hard to know what it is. It's hard to prove it. And so why put a rule in place that we can't enforce? And my constant reminder to them, as well as a few other players on the committee, was, it's very simple. It you're not going to be able to, there's a lot of gray, but when it's black and white, it's black and white, and you can drop the hammer when it's black and white. And this situation felt pretty black and white from the information that I saw. And so, I think it's great that it happened, not so much for that player, but for the game as a whole, because I think it deters people from funny business. Now, people who thought about doing something funny at this year's NHC, there was some group somewhere saying, hey, we could try to do this, this and that, and this and this and that. And then now they're like, oh, damn, they kind of look at this, they will disqualify us, and they are releasing the plays. You know, we used to talk about putting a cop car in the middle of the highway to get people to slow down. And that works. But what works even better is when every once in a while that cop car is real and someone pulls over and gets a ticket. And then it's like, it's even double the effect. And so I think that's kind of what happened, and hopefully it will continue to deter. One of the guys on the committee who's a legal eagle quoted a Supreme Court justice from like some pornography case where he essentially, I'm paraphrasing, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it, and that's kind of how I think this collusion thing is treated. It's hard to know exactly when it's happening and what it looks like, but when you see it, you know that that's it. And it feels like what happened recently was collusion, and I'm glad they acted the way they did.
Well put. You don't leave a lot of meat on the bone there for me. But if you had JK referencing Justice Stewart at Infinity to One on the podcast, you just cashed. So there is that going on as well. My general ideas about enforcement, a phrase I use a lot in business and in life: don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. I'm a big believer that you can have more of a pit boss mentality when it comes to enforcement. It's not anybody's right to play in these contests. It's you're allowed to play in them. They can be ruled with much more of an iron fist than they have been in the past. And I think this is a little bit of, I almost want to say, a head fake towards it, because an iron fist would have been, and your other two entries are out too. I feel like it's an acceptable compromise because of the way that this culture is changing. Now, there was another issue recently that maybe is what you were referring to, JK, but I'll let you say that or not say that, where there was a husband and wife playing and clearly used the same picks. But to me, now I don't have all the details here, and I heard a rumor that maybe one of the people in the couple copped to what happened, which would change this significantly. But to me, it's a lot more gray. If one contest is an NHC contest and one is a cash contest, that is no longer the cut and dried of two NHC contests, because you get into a question of who gave picks to whom. From the information I had, it seemed okay to me that they're letting that spouse continue to play in the NHC. Because again, who gave picks to whom? One's a cash contest, one's not. If you knew that the person who qualified was being given picks by somebody else, then I agree that should have been a DQ too. I don't have that information. So. Yeah, so what do you know?
I don't think so.
You think,
I don't think so at all.
You think you can give somebody picks and they can admit that and qualify and that's okay?
100%. 100%.
How's it different than the beard rule then? How does it? Okay, so, what's the difference? I'm on the other side than you here. So you explain.
So yeah, I got you here. So I don't believe, and I know you agree with me, that if I'm sitting at the NHC and Marshall Graham walks up and he says, "Hey, I talked to one of my trainers in South Florida. He loves this horse at 25-1. I hated the horse. I used the horse. He wins." That's not collusion.
No, but we're talking about every single pick.
No, so stay with me though.
Okay.
But here's the reason that we want collusion rules is because in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge is the perfect example to start with. Is that what Eric Moomy did was he was able to by skirting the rules, play with four entries, while the rest of us can only play with two if we're following the rules. So he had an unfair advantage by being able to play with four. If this husband and wife couple are playing in two different contests that have no relation to one another, then that's not collusion. There's no advantage gained. Like one person that was playing in the NHC gained no advantage by the other person playing in the cash game. There's no advantage gained in that situation. Now, you know, but if you look at the other situation where the DQ did happen recently with the older player and the younger player playing, there was an advantage because there was essentially a potential third seat being earned for the NHC, which you can't have three. You can only have two. And that was, you know, allegedly creating three. You see what I'm saying?
Like, I agree that
there's
it's
no
worse.
Advantage gained. There's no advantage.
But what if in the big picture of life, I don't know this for a fact, but it at the time, it opens up the possibility of this one player having three. It's the same. I don't really see how it's different. If we know that's what happened, I just don't know that we do know that. Do you have information in this issue?
No, I do know that the two contests were not related. One was a cash one and one was an NHC one.
Yeah, I don't think you should be able to play through another player in an NHC contest. So I'm saying if you know that's what, again, I heard a rumor that that had been copped to. And if that's the case, that's an issue. But to me, if not, our opinions are pretty darn similar.
So what you're saying is that player one had already qualified twice and was playing under player three's name in the contest?
Even if player one hadn't qualified twice, if player one is dictating what somebody else does and is then going to have control of that entry at the NHC in another name, thus opening up the possibility for a three-headed entry come the time, I don't like it. I mean, honestly, I don't even think it's that big of an edge. I just think it stinks. And what I would have done and what might have happened, I don't know that this didn't happen. If I was somebody at the NTRA, I mean, I would have had a very serious talk with those people about, you know,
yeah,
we can't prove it this time, you know. Yeah,
they're on the no-fly list.
Yeah.
I think they should be on the no-fly list, and like you watch what they do moving forward.
Yeah.
But I've also seen this situation too. I've seen it firsthand with it could be a couple, it could be just two friends, it could be brothers, it could be anything. I don't want to alienate anyone. If player one wakes up on Sunday morning and handicaps a whole card and plays these races for the sequence. Player two is like, "Hey, did you look at these races today?" And player one says, "Yes." Player two is like, "Dang, I only got 30 minutes to sign up for this contest that starts. Let me just see what you did. I'm going to just play what you played." And they're playing in separate contests. I don't think it's like the greatest thing in the world, but it's not collusion.
It's an interesting theoretical it's in that gray area we were talking about. I would say that if you had proof that that player was putting in somebody else's picks, but then they weren't going to have control of the entry at the NHC. Yeah, you get into a gray area that's worth exploring to decide what should be okay and what shouldn't. I mean, I know it's not okay if in that instance the player who hadn't prepared properly is then going to have that entry controlled and play collusively with the person who gave them the picks at the NHC. That, if you had a way of knowing that, clear DQ. If at that point, okay, they got in and they're going to be playing independently. I mean, it really stinks. From a competitive point of view, it still stinks either way. But I get the idea that it's you know, I mean, I guess the smart thing would be, you know, you don't do it so obviously that it could be that it could be seen. But I mean, when you know that's what happened, like, ugh, I mean, just in the sense of fairness, that should be a DQ too. It really should. If you know that's what happened, in my heart, that's what I feel. But I do understand that we're getting into a gray area that would become extremely difficult to police. I think the right thing, I mean, you said no fly list. To me, that implies not letting play. I would just think that.
Yeah, I just thought that phrase would be cuter than what else I was going to say. I didn't really mean it literally. I just meant like, not the no fly list, but the TSA alert list where, you know, it seems like every time you go through there, they're going to pat you down.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's right.
They need to, when they sit down on Saturday night at the NHC to audit, there's about 27 people I can think of to be the first people I would look at. You know, okay, let's see here. Well, what are we doing here? No, okay, no, okay, nothing. Great, move on, next one. You know what I mean? I think they're now on that list because of the behavior that they showed in this one situation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not anti-family entries at all. I'm not anti-people handicapping together. But at least, I mean, here's a funny way to look at it that's like a little bit showing how the sausage is made. And, you know, this will sound funny to some people, but I mean, just to explain where I am as somebody who covered this for years, you got to at least be able to have a story you can tell that makes sense about how X, Y, and Z happened. There's no story you can tell about, and all of my picks were exactly the same as this person. That just doesn't, that can't fly. That's just going to be an obvious beard. And if that happens at the NHC and somebody's going to in that position who makes it to the final table, they got to kick them out, in my opinion. I just don't think you can, if you can't even tell the story, it doesn't pass the test as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, wow. Breaking news.
What's going on?
Omaha Beach.
You're joking.
Yeah, I just got the text.
You are kidding me. He scratched?
I just got the text. I mean, unless it's a joke. I'm pretty sure.
Completely bizarre.
Omaha Beach, scratched from Pegasus. Blake Jesse tweeted it 22 minutes ago.
My goodness. And Blake Jesse, I mean, I love Blake, but I'd like to see some industry source.
Well, Blake did it, and then Sean and Jake both texted me that he's out.
Let's look at
they're out. And then someone else texted me. How crappy is this race shaping up now? But he didn't say crappy.
Oh, my God. All right, so, yeah, of course, the info earlier today. I've never been so happy that we procrastinated, JK, because if we had recorded the show when we'd originally planned, we would have missed this completely. I'd still like to see, yep, boom, it's there, Jay Privman. Now, I love all those people you mentioned, but when Jay Privman says it, now I'm definitely able to proceed as if it's 100% sure. Oh no. And it's not good. Potential fracture in the right hind leg. Full credit to Jay, who you should be following on Twitter and reading. I feel bad. I'm like half stealing his reporting here. It feels like, but I just want to read to the point where they say, and we think everything's going to be, it sounds like we think everything's going to be okay, but we ain't taking any chances. Oh my gosh, JK, in your life, horses who don't get to fill their potential that we believe they have. I mean, isn't Omaha Beach top three?
Yeah, because we're never going to see him running again, obviously. I mean, this is going to be his last race after that injury. I can't imagine he'll ever do anything ever again. I mean, I guess there's a world in which they want to get one more and give him a break.
The deal's already done. Yeah, going to stud this year. That's it. That's it. No, Kentucky Derby favorite, 3-5 to, and now I'm really feeling sick because I was smug earlier. So I was on Sky yesterday and there was like, I can't remember if it was 6-4, 6-5, honestly, but there was good odds against money on Omaha Beach, which I was advising people to bet, which of course you can do over there in a civilized country. And then the Spunted Run not running news broke, and I sent a smug tweet to Tony just basically saying, hey, I hope everybody listened. Now I really hope everybody didn't listen. And somewhere there's some lucky goofball who woke up this morning, who didn't bet yesterday on Omaha Beach, woke up this morning, saw the Spunted Run news, and was absolutely kicking himself in the face for not making the bet yesterday before the Spun to Run news broke, who's now just an incredibly lucky human who has more money to bet on other things this weekend. So think about that idiot when you're walking around today. Just Just insane, JK. That is crazy. Breaking news right here on the podcast. I guess it won't be breaking news by the time people are listening to this, but how fun that you got to hear us talk about this nonsense in real time.
Somebody just tweeted, it's a very funny Twitter account, Pegasus Day is now an overpriced Nelly concert.
Oh, man.
No, the rest of the day is good. The turf race before, which we'll talk about, is a lot of fun, and there's all the other greatest things. Just things like, you know, it feels like the last few years we've had some really big kind of cool showdowns, right? California Chrome and Arrogate, Gunrunner and West Coast, and then City of Light and Accelerate. There's like a lot of fun matchups that race has provided, and I guess now it's Higher Power and Diamond Oops.
Let me say this. Maybe, I don't know, maybe from a contest point of view, if you like me, you thought Omaha Beach was a short-priced single in the race. From, you know, you got to figure out how you're going to deal with that if you are playing in the Pegasus contest. Maybe now it opens it up a little bit. I don't know, unless you think Higher Power is just going to become a short price single. Let's wait. Let's go back to the beginning of this pick six sequence. Let's talk about these races, starting with the Grade 3 Hooper, and we'll get to the Pegasus that we're now completely underprepared for. You want to go first with the Hooper, or shall I?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I don't mind. You know, this race is interesting. You know, there's two horses for Dale Roman that looked like potential Derby types at one point of their career, Seven Trumpets and Dak Attack. Both were kind of well thought of, but never really turned into much as a whole, right? Look, I think Great Magician in here is going to be tough. He's a horse that I'll probably try to build some things around in the contest. He ran well enough in the San Antonio. First kind of back off of a short break where he ran into Gift Box that day, spent a lot of time down on the inside, probably not an ideal spot on the modern day racetrack. And you know, it's that West Coast dirt coming to the East Coast. And Peter Miller can obviously train him up for the big days. He's 27% so far in 2020. He's got 7 wins out of 26 starts. And I think Grey Magician could be tough here. Another horse that was meant to be a real quality type is now turning into a 4-year-old. You know, we talk about Omaha Beach. We don't often get to see these 3-year-olds turn 4 where they really make that progression. They really do what a horse like Frosted did, where we got to see him actually turn into an older horse and what kind of performances he could put together. So Palace Malice, I think, is another one. So interested to see Grey Magician. I think he's going to continue to improve, and I think he'll run well on Saturday.
I bet a little Tale of Silence in the Cigar Mile, just thinking there was some weird little world, maybe, and maybe on a different track it would have been so, where there could have been a meltdown in there, and he was obviously just a massive price. Here he's got the chance of a pace collapse as well. I like the cutback. I think the price is going to be pretty good. I wouldn't want to stand alone with a horse like Tale of Silence, but this is one I would want in my mix as potentially the best closer. Another I'll mention that you didn't mention that I'm curious to get your take on is the potential favorite in here, Free Enterprise. Very fast figures that fit in the right hands. This is a massive test, but it would not shock me if Free Enterprise was ready for it. What do you think of Free Enterprise in this spot, JK?
You know, look, like with all Chads and all Bobs, they're always pretty short on the morning line. When they have a lot of ones, they always get bet. And Free Enterprise is one that if I was playing a multi-race bet, I don't see how you could really leave him off. The horse has a great opportunity to win. The figures are fast. The debut, he would have broke his maiden first out, but he lost a performer. And, you know, I think he's a nice horse. I think he can win. I think that the horse that I like, Grey Magician's drawn outside of him, which I think is an advantage. I wouldn't be shocked if Free Enterprise won, but I think there's going to be more value on Peter Miller's runner and Eclipse's runner to the outside.
I'm glad to mention, though, especially since you say you would use in a spread, I'd hate to not mention a favorite in a race like this that starts off this pick six, which is not the mandatory payout. The mandatory payout is Sunday, just so folks know. But I don't know, is there a world in which you could see yourself still potentially playing this pick six, or do you think you'll find ways of leveraging your opinion elsewhere?
No, I mean, I think the pick six is, for me is the target day for that will be Sunday, the mandatory payout. Saturday is kind of the tricky rules with the jackpot stuff. So I'll probably stick to the contest and the pick five and doubles and things like that on Saturday. But if I was playing the pick six with the rules, the way it's set up, I try to beat Chad here. In fact, I'd single my top pick, Great Magician, see if I can get alive in the pick six for the other horses that I like. And if so, there's an opportunity to kind of get cute there with some other long prices and sweep the pool. You know, Chad winning the first leg is not gonna lead to that likely.
I think what I would do is skip the race for horizontals, bet Tale of Silence, and just cover with the likes of Free Enterprise and Grey Magician, and maybe even a little Seven Trumpets there, just one you mentioned. A horse I've always liked. Looks a little overmatched to me on pace figures, but I wouldn't want to be right about my top pick, Tale of Silence, firing and not cash something if Tale of Silence were to run second to Seven Trumpets. I like your idea about getting involved in the pick five. It starts with the next race, race number 8, the La Prévoyante. And I'll start this one because you started the last one. Am I crazy to think that maybe Mean Mary can see out this trip, JK? Should have an easy lead. I always give motion horses extra credit when it comes to stretching out. Another thought I had was that if she ends up going too fast, it might benefit the stablemate Toriga. And for me, Lady Paname was one of these horses who I know is going to take a ton of money from an extremely dangerous barn in Chad Brown, but one that I was maybe willing to take a little bit of a shot against in the sense that not that much of a figure edge at all, if any, and has had some pretty good setups along the way. How do you see this one?
Yeah, Lady Paname is the type of horse that has got me wanting to eat a Shake Shack. Feels like Saratoga, right? You get this horse who just isn't that great on paper, doesn't really wow. You have the two wins. The figures weren't that great. Was short priced in both. Hasn't really won any big races. And then you try to get cute and beat. And then, you know, she wins by 3 without being even shown the stick, right? It's one of those.
I've seen that movie before.
Yeah. I actually thought this race was motion through and through, whether it was Mean Mary getting loose on the front end or Toriga coming from out of it. So Louise gonna obviously be aggressive with Mean Mary, and her best chance to win is on the front end. And Toriga's best chances are to come from out of it with Hall of Famer Johnny Velasquez. So Johnny and Graham obviously having a history of putting together some big performances. So, you know, I thought those two made the most sense. If I had to lean on a horse, I would lean on Toriga, who's run, you know, the longer distances before. Mean Mary, you know, not that I question her ability to do it, being out of a Diner former mare, she shouldn't have any problem, but she hasn't quite done it yet. I like them both almost equally, but if you had to nail me down for a pick, give me Johnny Velasquez coming from off of it with Toriga.
I'll go the other way just for fun and make Mean Mary the top pick. For the pick 5, would you use Lady Paname, or would you let her beat you and start up again in the pick 4 if it all goes wrong?
You know, it depends on what is what else happens in the sequence, right? Whatever your opinion is elsewhere, Omaha Beach, right? He would have been a single, so maybe the opportunity to spread here makes a little bit more sense. But now, if you feel like you need to spread in the Pegasus, then maybe you want to be a little skinny here. I think that answer honestly lies in what your goal is with the bet. If you're trying to suck some value out in some places, it's a great opportunity to toss Chad. If your value is coming elsewhere, go ahead and toss him in there. You'd hate to get beat on this leg by Chad Brown.
It's an interesting way of looking at the world that we've never really talked about. Looking at a sequence holistically and saying to yourself, where is the value in this bet? Is this a leg where I'm trying to really extract value, or is this a leg I'm trying to survive and advance? We may have another show coming up shortly where we dive much deeper into pick 5 strategy, and that might be an interesting framework with which to look at some of these races heading forward. And now we will head forward to race number 9, the Grade 2 Inside Information, 7 furlongs on the Gulfstream dirt. What you thinking?
You know, this race is tricky because obviously Spice Perfection has that big race that we all saw where she kind of answered the stretch out question up at Aqueduct, and she scratched in the La Cañada. I would imagine that decision probably had to do with running in this race because she was back on the back working on the 13th for a race that she scratched on the 11th. So I don't think that was anything negative there. She's going to be bet pretty heavily. I think she's kind of got that name recognition and a horse that's pretty short on the morning line. It looks like they're going to fly in this race. I don't think it's got the glitz and the glamour of the Coolmore Team Tactics we see it from time to time, but I think there's going to be a lime green silk version of that with Ron Pellucci having two, with Heaven Has My Nikki and Liza Star down on the inside. Liza Star, excuse me, I feel like Liza will probably go, and there's a bunch of other speed in here as well of horses that I think will probably hook up. Todd's horse, Nona Madeline, JP's Delight, all of them. I feel like they're going to run a little bit. And that's going to set up our boy Shug on the outside with Pink Sands, who's got a very impressive race over the racetrack going the flat mile here back in December after a terrible start and came circling down the middle of the track. I feel like you're going to see the same trip from her. And I think she's going to have a lot more pace to run into than she did prior. So Pink Sands is going to be my top pick without a doubt. You know, you got to use the other ones in here that make sense. I think Todd's horse obviously makes sense. The service. If you're going to spread it here, but my definite A horse in this spot is a horse, Pink Sands.
Like the great Meatloaf once sang, JK, you took the words right out of my mouth. Very interested in Pink Sands. And when I say the great Meatloaf, I don't mean his social views, but I'm a big fan of Pink Sands in general. Loves Gulfstream as well. 3 of 4. And in the fourth race, had a trip to throw into the mix. You said the rest. We'll leave it at that. Pink Sands for me in the inside information. And that leads us to race number 10, which is the McKnight Grade 3, going 1.5 miles on the turf. Not a race where I had a strong opinion. I thought it was going to probably end up spready. I wouldn't want to get beat by American Tattoo, who looks to have a wire shot on the Gulfstream. It's more turf than derf this time of year, but I still think that speed could prove to be very dangerous for Pletcher and Johnny V. Red Knight, I feel like, is suited very much by this distance. If American Tattoo is a proper runoff, that might help Red Knight's chances as well. It's just a horse that's just super obvious to me on form and figures. And then Mike Maker, of course, has 3. I didn't love them, but in my picks, whatever I play, I don't see myself losing to any of the 3 makers completely. I would have them at least a backup level in this spot. Can you make this a little more clear for me?
You know, American Tattoo is one of those horses where when you play the game a lot and you're always, you know, you're doing podcasts, you're at races. American Tattoo on May 3rd of last year on Derby weekend was like a real buzz horse. You know, it was 3 to 1 that day, 7 to 2 that day, first time for, you know, in the U.S. for Todd, and they really liked the horse. And, you know, obviously the money that horse took first out is an indication of that. And it seems like they can never really get the horse going in the right direction. Until they won the race at Belmont, but then they had the marathon is where it seems Todd realized this horse wants to run all day. And now is giving the horse a little bit of an opportunity to run on the turf, drawn outside, will be in the clear. Johnny will kind of get that Todd trip, you'd imagine, where he's going to be sitting second or third right off of someone. And I think American Tattoo, although has never run on the turf before, is one that could be very dangerous. My eyes landed on Cross Border. You know, we've a running joke since we were back at the place of the letters. If Mike Maker put me and Pete in a horse suit and ran us long on the turf, I'd bet on it. Cross Border is one where had some very impressive races up at Saratoga this summer. I think the horse won 3 races at Saratoga this summer, and then tried. You know, Mike tried the horse 1.5 miles. Now, if I believe that Mike is that good in these long turf races, that this horse ran 5th, he doesn't think that he's running along again, doesn't think that the horse ran poorly because of that, came back and won the 11 for a long race. So I think Cross Border is going to be able to handle the distance, get Jose Ortiz, these maker horses at the 3/8 pole when they're going 1.5 miles. While the rest of them are all kind of starting to scrub, they seem to kind of range up. It's kind of that third lung, something about the way he trains. So I think Cross Border could be tough in this spot as well. He
trains him to finish. There's no doubt about it. And is a keen judge of where to place his horses as well. So those are all very reasonable cases, and makes me want to make sure to press those two a little bit more than I was going to in my little spread. Are you anti Red Knight, or was that more of just a consideration of value?
Red Knight is one I think that is probably going to be overbet. I feel like he's kind of like the easy pick. It's Maker,
yeah.
Rosario. You know, it's the first horse that people see when they open up the PPEs for this race. I think there's actually some magic to that. No, I don't think there's any reason to get cute and beat here, but, you know, it can happen.
You said Maker, you meant Mott, of course, with Red Knight.
Mott.
Little bit of UK slang, UK to English slang that popped in my head while you were talking. You mentioned the idea that American Tattoo had been a buzz horse. You know what they call a buzz, what you mean by buzz horse, you know what they call in the UK? I love it.
No, what is it?
A talking horse. How about that?
Oh, like Mr. Ed.
Something like Mr. Ed. That's just about right. All right, let's move on, JK. We got a few minutes left. We don't have to rush, but we'll move on anyway. You're not going to get a better segue than Mr. Ed. Pegasus Turf, it's a grade one. It's the return to the races of Without Parole, who I think we both ended up liking in the Breeders' Cup Mile and ran a terrific race there. Back here with Frankie Dettori, reunited with Frankie Dettori in the irons. I think, especially compared to some of the key contenders in here, is just going to get a great trip. I'm all about Without Parole. I think the 4-1 would be very square. It's not an easy situation, but this is a pretty easy pick for me.
You know, this race was tricky. You know, I talked about this one for CBS Sportsline. I thought Magic Wand, I've never really been a huge fan. She ran a huge race.
How could you not be a huge fan of Magic Wand? That's just crazy.
Yeah, no, just never. I mean,
you don't like horses who always run their race no matter where they are in the world and are tough as nails? That's what you're telling me?
No, I just at the price she'll be from the post she's drawn, I have some hesitation, and I feel like there's some opportunity.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying, it's just like the way you phrased it is. You know, I mean, this is a horse who I feel like if you love racing, the first thing you should be talking about when you look at her PP is how tough and cool she is. And then you could say, why you don't like her in this spot. She's
been here four times and she's never won.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the form. Her form to Bricks and Mortar and Sister Charlie beats this field by... Look, I don't like her in the race. Again, I love Without Parole here. I think he'll get a better trip. But I mean, on form, I mean, Magic Wand is... I don't think you can crab her. Yeah, she's had a few seconds around the world. But I mean, geez, look who she's been running against.
No, I agree. She could absolutely win. Ryan Moore's no stranger to negotiating a wide post in North American turf race, like he did with Hit of the Bomb at Keeneland in the Breeders' Cup back in 2015. I just felt like there were some opportunities to make some money here because the other horse in here, I think the second choice, Mo Forza, I don't like either. I'm going to try to beat that one. West Coast Turf horse coming out east. I've been trying to beat him in his last four starts, and I'm not going to stop now when he's got some attention in a big race. So I'm going to try to beat Mo Forza as well. You know, the way that I kind of laid this out is I was going to use five horses playing doubles into Omaha Beach, not using Mo Forza and Magic Wand.
So, I have to interrupt you for 1 second because I'm so devastated at myself. I had on my new board a sad trombone sound effect, and I just deleted it to put in one of the themes. And DJ Unstable was like, you might want to keep that sad trombone. And I was just thinking as you said that, how amazing it would be when you said I was going to play the five into Omaha Beach. I was just going to drop in the wah, wah, and now I can't do it. Anyway, please continue.
Yo, no, I feel bad that I cheated you on that. I'm sure I'll give you another opportunity to do that another time. But so the horses I was going to use are Zulu Alpha, drawn down on the inside. You know, it's 3-for-2 at Gulfstream. Mike Maker, Tyler, a bunch of value. You know the horse is going to save ground if he gets clear, could run on and win this race. Without Parole, for all the reasons you mentioned, no reason to repeat it. I think this horse, the being reunited with Frankie, probably the best grass rider in the country and the world. Save ground down the inside. Same thing. Probably will need to get lucky. Sadler's Joy seems to just keep trying. I know that Sadler's Joy is probably better going the three turns, but I still think that Sadler's Joy is one that with the right trip and the big horses not showing up, like why can't Sadler's Joy, if you take out Magic Wand and you take out Mo Forza, say they get weird trips or Mo Forza is not as good as everyone thinks or we think, why can't Sadler's Joy win? you know, he's run well here. He could save ground with a good trip. You know, I think, you know, he's interesting. Channel Cat, I didn't think Channel Cat was going to run well last time going the 9 furlong side. It might have been a little bit too sharp. Horse is tactical, has had some wire-to-wire win up at Saratoga. Gets Johnny Velasquez here, so I'd imagine this one will be forward in a race that doesn't have a lot of speed. And so I think Channel Cat makes sense. He was trying to close into that slow pace with Instill Regard, and that obviously didn't work out. And then Sacred Life. Awful trip last time out at Del Mar, and so I thought that one could improve. Isn't drawn well, just the same as Magic Wand, but it's going to be probably 4 times the price. And so I think that for 4 times the price, it's fine to try to figure that out, especially off of a poor trip like he got last time. So those are the horses I'm going to try to use into my new Pegasus pick that we'll talk about in a second. But if I had to nail me down to a pick, I would pick Channel Cat.
All right. Not a lot of confidence in that selection. And I got the impression when you said my new Pegasus pick, you it was going to be sort of like my new Pegasus pick as soon as I come up with one, but that's okay. Cause that's the situation.
No, I have it. I'll give it to you now. From a radio royalty, and you don't know that's how you tease the next segment.
You didn't let me finish, which was because I was going to say, because I know that's exactly what I'm going to do, because I have absolutely no clue when we get to the next race at this point. But I did want to bring up, we'd be remiss in not bringing up, you mentioned the idea of this mile and 3/16 being too sharp for some. I'm going to put Arklo in that category, and with you and I not betting on Arklo, that means if you're playing in the Pegasus tournament, you should probably just bet it all on Arklo.
Yes.
Because he really has made a fantastic career out of holding us up against the wall and punching us in the face until we said uncle. But I'll pick him from time. I've picked him once or twice, but it won't be here. We'll see how he does. Godspeed to Connections. Obviously, you know, there's nothing personal in the non-picking of Arklo. I just feel like it's going to be a little bit too sharp. Anything else on this race before we turn the page?
No, I think we're good.
All right, let's move on to the Pegasus World Cup. It once looked like it was going to be a Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile rematch. I was so looking forward to it. I thought Omaha Beach was more or less nailed on in this spot. Eliminated from being able to compete because of injury. How smart is Irad Ortiz and his agent Steve Rushing feeling right now, JK?
Yeah, no offense to them, dumb luck in my opinion, right? I mean, I think there's reasons. I think there's reasons why Irad showed up on Mucho Gusto. I think that Mucho Gusto was purchased by Connections. Somewhere in the Middle East. I don't want to make the assumption that it was a Saudi gentleman who did it. I just know that it was somewhere in that side of the world. And the plans, from what I understand, are to run in the Saudi Cup as well. So probably the two-race commitment to run in this one and in that one for $20 million was probably the reason that Irad decided to take Mucho Gusto. And there's nothing wrong with, helping that relationship between him and Bob to get him on some horses for Bob in certain situations, or maybe when Bob ships east or in Breeders' Cup. So, dumb luck. I don't think it was, I don't think anyone feels too intelligent today.
I mean, there was some signal in it maybe in terms of, I figure if he thought that, Thoughts of Underrun would definitely see out the trip or something and was definitely had some huge edge over Omaha Beach in this spot, I think they probably would have kept the call. The new owner, by the way, is, Prince Faisal bin Khalid, who I believe is a Saudi prince. So there you go. As far as some backing up for that. Yeah, who knows? There might have been some other financial arrangement. I do think there's a political thing going on. I mentioned being on with Tony Ennis yesterday on Sky, and he was shocked at the decision. And I suggested there might be a political element, especially if he didn't love Spunderun's chances, that the idea that you'd want to get in the Baffert barn. I mean, what better time with what's going on in California? With Mike Smith, you're going to hang around for a few more years, hopefully. But, you know, in the big picture of life, Irad Ortiz, the ability to try to position yourself as, like, the number one guy to the Baffert barn with all the derbies he's going to be running horses in the course of Erat's career. It's not crazy. It's not, you don't like to see it. You know, I had the pleasure of hanging out with Juan Carlos Guerrero, and you know, I'd like to think he's going to be back on the biggest stages, but there is an idea to me that it makes sense to, if you're on the fence, that you lean towards the guy who you think is going to get you all these Derby and Breeders' Cup mounts. You made the other point about, you know, perhaps it being a two-race deal with Mucho Gusto. So, you know, I think those are all the things that go into it. I was feeling a little bad for Juan Carlos. Of course, then you end up with Javier Castellano, and, you know, you're obviously not losing much there. It all doesn't matter because he's not running. Omaha Beach isn't running. Have I stalled enough to give you time to give a cogent analysis of this race, JK?
No, I'm ready to rock.
Let's do it.
It was easy.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, Benny Southree's going to be upset. Higher power for me. You know, West Coast turf, dirt horse coming out to the East Coast, ran that just blazing race last summer in the Pacific Classic. Broke a little bit slowly in the Breeders' Cup Classic. McKenzie and Vino Rosso would gallop and win this race, and he was right behind those horses. Not right behind him, a few lengths behind him, but was behind him going the mile and a quarter. I remember when Higher Power won, there was people that were close to the horse that were concerned about the distance at a mile and a quarter. Now, obviously, that wasn't a problem. He ran well enough in the Pacific Classic. But I think that he could be sitting on another big race. So Higher Power for me. And then it's more because I just don't believe in any other ones, right? I mean, True Timber to me can't win. Taps kind of showed that he wasn't necessarily good enough and took advantage of some good opportunities up at Saratoga this summer. Diamond Oops is a horse that I love underneath, a horse that could jump up and win, not a horse that I could bet confidently on. Seeking the Soul is odds on to hit the board in some way. I saw Dallas Stewart last night.
Did you tell him I said hi?
No,
I probably smart.
I told him. I said, you know that Peter Thomas, the guy with the beard. He's like, yeah, I'm not friends with him anymore. So I had to save face. I'm just not crazy about the other ones. I do think it's worth us at least mentioning, because I did get quoted in an article about it, about am I concerned about the Lasix off as a horse player? Because none of the horses in this race or the previous race will be using Lasix. And no, I don't really care.
Care to elaborate on that?
I think my quote was, and the point I wanted to get across is, like, you know, it's not ideal, but I understand why it's happening. You know, we're backed into a corner as an industry, and we have to try to find answers. I think that it's kind of silly to insinuate that what's happened in the industry in the last year and a half has anything to do with Lasix. I'm not a believer of that. I understand the outside perception is that it is. And I'm not opposed to the idea that our game could thrive with no race day meds. I don't know the answer to that. I reserve those conversations and decisions to horsemen and the vets and the regulators. I'm open to the discussion that it does matter or doesn't matter. So I just kind of am just going to stay out of it and understand why we're in that position. And I think the other thing I said, because Michael Baychok was quoted as you know, thinking this was, you know, pretty offensive to the horse player. And I don't necessarily think he's wrong. I just don't think this is in the top 10 of the most offensive things that happened to horse players.
Paul Matisse had an interesting quote about it that was sort of more in the Baychok vein, where he said something to the effect, it was a whole conversation on Twitter, and the idea was that the information will be out there of who the potential bleeders are, and, you know, and you'll probably, those people are going to bet enough that you'll probably see it reflected in the odds, and Paul was pointing out that it just, that's the kind of information that should be made transparent. And I think in a perfect world, I agree. But I think I'm also at the end of the day with you, JK, in that we have so many more things. I feel like there are more pressing concerns, and I would rather just put my energy into those. But those guys aren't wrong.
No. Sorry for the delay. The ocean is crashing. I don't want to annoy anyone with this crashing ocean out the window.
Humble Brag Hall of Fame, everybody. What do we think?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I'm in a very modest hotel. There's a lot of, you don't have to have an opinion about something. You know, I think a lot of people in this world, in this day and age, you feel like you have to have a black and white opinion. Like, I mean, yeah, I agree with Paul and them. I can see how it's not really fair for the horse player to. I have no idea how higher power is going to react with or without LASIK. I don't know. And so that unknown is unfortunate when I'm making a wager.
Here's the fact of the matter. Oh, you go ahead.
I understand why it's happening. No, but I also understand why it's happening.
Even if you think you know, you don't know. I'll tell you that. All right. I had information about a horse recently that was running in California for the first time that had a bleeding issue previously in another jurisdiction while being treated with LASIK and then was going to California and then was going to have the LASIK limited. I thought this was valuable inside information that caused me to fade the horse, who promptly ran off the screen. Now, I know I'm using one narrative example, and that doesn't prove anything, and it doesn't have anything to do with the overall fairness that I do think Michael and Paul are correct about. But I will just say, it's probably not, the quote-unquote inside information, it's probably not as valuable as the people receiving it really think it is anyway. And for my money, I'll just take to looking at the PPs and trying to handicap the best I can. And I think that's probably the best thing that we can do. Now, I do take issue with your dismissal of tax in this race, JK. And I want to go back to that and ask you just exactly what you thought was wrong with his discovery.
No, there's nothing wrong with his discovery. I mean, he ran well, but
you made it sound like he was this exposed horse who didn't belong at the highest levels. And to me, with the Breeders' Cup winner in Omaha Beach out of here, he absolutely fits with these horses and should get a good trip, and I want to make him my pick.
Here are the horses that he's beat in his two wins as a three-year-old. He beat Tacitus, who was ridiculously naughty that day, and the jury is still out on him. And he beat Global Campaign.
You're being very kind. You're being very kind about our friend Tacitus to not be completely writing him off, but I agree.
Global Campaign, who was a horse that came with a big expectations. I believe he's a half to Boldoro. Could be wrong about that, but I think I'm right. And he hasn't really turned into a superstar. And then he beat Not That Brady, who was claimed, and Our Brain Trust, who, exactly my point. And so, and then the Jim Dandy, he got that brilliant ride from IRAD where he stayed off the rail the entire time. And I just think that he's not nearly as good as we think he is.
He ran his best figure last time out as a late three-year-old. The calendar has turned. I think he's going to get a good trip. There's plenty of speed that's not as good as him. I mean, I don't hate your pick as another logical contender, but I mean, I think it's hard to make this horse anything worse than the second most likely winner, isn't it? Maybe third. He's in the top three.
If you want to do a head-to-head, we haven't done one in a while. I don't mind serving you up.
Interesting. You're going to go with, I really like Higher Power.
No. I'm going to make it sexier than that.
Okay. Who do you want to take? Mucho?
I'll take Diamond Oops.
Oh, very interesting. All right. I mean, I'm going to take that just for a fun head-to-head. I've got two tacks. You've got three Diamond Oops in this year's Pegasus. We talked about Tacitus. Let's talk just for a minute here, just to button up the show since we've gone long anyway. Unless you have anything else on the World Cup. You feel good about where we are with this one?
Feel good.
Let's talk about another horse, I think, in the same barn, who I wanted to be better than it appears like he might be. Hidden Scroll made his return to the races. Unfortunately, ends up scratching in the gate. And this is one I am hoping we'll get to see the moment we didn't quite get to see with Omaha Beach, where he really does at some point show off the talent we think he had. Became a little bit of a kerfuffle on social media with some types out there, you know, to my mind, somewhat obnoxiously saying, "See, I told you he wasn't any good," which is just ridiculous. I don't understand the hate for this horse. I know we were part of the hype machine on this horse, so maybe that's part of why I say that. But I was just curious for you as a horse player, if your thoughts about Hidden Scroll have changed, what do you think we're going to see from him this year? What do you think about the social media reaction to him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I actually addressed it. To me, the hate comes from all of the people in the world who jumped off the bandwagon either immediately after the slot performance. Oh, it couldn't have been real. He won the slot, which is, you know, tomorrow or Saturday will be the 1 year anniversary of that. Or if it's the oh, when he got into that speed duel where Joel was taken off. Oh, that, see, I told you he wasn't that good. And then when he came back and just never could really put it together. To me, those people that are rooting his unfortunate situation, you know, with the gate scratch, and they just want to continue to be right. And they know that if he turns into a good horse and runs well, then suddenly their opinion was wrong. They were wrong about this declaration of him not being a very good horse and being an overhyped horse. So, you know, people marry themselves to an opinion and they want to feel smart. So, you know, makes sense to me.
Well, first of all, I didn't read your tweet because I think I have you muted. No, that's not true. I just wanted to be mean. I did read your tweet. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up, because I thought it was a good point. As for, you know, somebody who wanted to question this horse after a muddy maiden win, respect, okay? I get it. Like, if you want to say, hey, he wasn't as good as that figure, and you wanted to get on the anti-Hidden Scroll train, then I'll give you some props. If you're somebody who, after the race in Florida, when he dueled a really good sprinter into submission and ended up losing to a good horse, I mean, that's just ridiculous. You should know that was, he showed arguably more talent that day than he did in the gaudy maiden win. So somebody holding on to an opinion from there, you know, no respect at all. Come on, get with it. And what about going forward, though? I mean, are we, is he at this point just a star-crossed horse? We're going to have to accept that? Or is this a horse who we could still see fill some of that potential?
Yeah, I mean, you know, horses scratch at the gate all the time, right? For various reasons that don't indicate anything about how good they are or what they are or what they can become. So let's give it another shot. Let's see what happens. I've heard someone, who, maybe it was Pipes. I'll give him credit. I think it was Pipes. He said, looks forward to seeing him try the turf at some point. So, I would, you know, maybe there's a future for him to eventually end up on the turf. That could be something to be interesting.
He's a podcast horse. He's one we'll be following throughout the year. All right, I think we've kept the people long enough today, JK. We're going to let him go unless you've got a – give us a closing – I'm not going to say unless you've got – I'm going to put your feet to the fire. Give us a closing thought.
Sunday fun day is going to be fun. The mandatory payout to pick six on Sunday.
You're so hanging around?
I think my flight's at like 9 o'clock at night. Direct home, so I think that there'll be plenty of opportunity to attack some things. Sundays here, every Pegasus I've ever been to, Sundays here are very fun, because all my industry friends are still around. They don't have the pressures of the Saturday work, and they're all, we all went to this place called La Tub. It's like this hole in the wall burger place on A1A, right in Hollywood, and it's like this kind of dumpy, divey, outdoor, on the water place that has like these giant hamburgers that are really good. And so we always end up there doing hamburgers and carrying on with adult beverages. So before, in a bunch of suitcases, because everyone left their hotel and brought other stuff there before they go to the airport. So I foresee a pick six wager and a big old hamburger prior to my flight on Saturday night.
You paint a vivid picture. Why don't you sell La Tub a sponsorship while you're out there? It sounds like they're worthy of being part of our In the Money empire. Anyway, good stuff, JK. We wish you Godspeed in the Pegasus tournament, and we thank you very much for helping out today. We thank, of course, our sponsors, including Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We'll throw Black Type Thoroughbreds in there. 10 Strike Racing and Stats Race Lens. We'll call them out all today. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.